Hello again, everyone. This is my second attempt at speaking to a brick wall and trying not to be distracted by what's going on outside and hoping that the phone records okay, because most of you know that I'm not very good at technical stuff. I actually still find it hard that we can't look at each other in the eye. I miss fellowship. I know we're trying our best to stay in contact. But our faith is built on relationship with God and relationship with each other. And although that I know he's with us and I know he's with you and with me all of the time, I actually find it difficult not to be in your physical presence. I miss you. And I'm just hoping that you miss me. So if you've got a Bible, I want to look at Psalm 46. So please turn to it. And I'm just going to read it where it says this: God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at his swelling. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in her midst, in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage and the kingdoms totter, and he utters his voice, the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth, and he breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted amongst the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. A short story first. I have a strange connection with this psalm. When you go to Bible college, you study homiletics, the art of preaching. But before I'd been to Bible college, I had actually preached before. I, in fact, preached my first sermon quite badly at a ladies' meeting when I was about 16. And I know that you're thinking, why hasn't he got any better? But anyway, this psalm was given to me to preach. We were all given a different passage. I was given this psalm, and it was I had to preach to the students and to the lecturer. Now, I want you to imagine the picture. It's just like a classroom, students in front of tables, the lecturer leaning up the back wall, and me standing in front of these people preaching. And you were looked at in terms of content and application and theology and style, mannerisms, all of those sort of things. But we learnt as a year at Bible college not to be harsh in criticizing each other, because if you did, you got it back in full force. Now, before you ask, I am not using these notes that I had then. These are new notes, and so this is a new sermon for me. And to be honest, it would take a little bit to find where those notes are, I think. So that's some personal context. To the psalm. It has stayed with me. It's something that I go to quite often. It is one of my go-to psalms because that experience helped it to stick with me. I guess that you've got go-to sermon psalms or go-to passages, and this is one of mine. Now, I'm rubbish at languages, German, French, so I'm going to have a go at German. This is not going to help you, but we'll have a go. Ein Festberg ist unser Gott. Pardon, you say? Well, that's the first line of Martin Luther's famous hymn based on Psalm 46. To us, it would be, a mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing. He amid the flood of mortal ills prevailing. Now, there can be no doubt that Luther's strong, unshakable confidence in God as his refuge, as God as his strength, as God as his help, as God as an impenetrable fortress, is what provided for him the foundation, the basis, as it were, to work from, to accomplish what we now know as the Protestant Reformation. It was, those words were in him and enabled him. I guess as well, if we look back in the Bible, we will find things like Elijah. And you ask the question, how did he face the nastiness of Ahab and Jezebel and the prophets of Baal? And it's the same thing, that he knew God in this way. Also for Daniel, as he fearlessly confronted the power and pressure that came from King Nebuchadnezzar and King Belshazzar, and was in the lion's den, as it were. These things were in him as a person. This was the God that he knew. It was the same for Paul, as Paul stood on numerous occasions in front of Jewish prosecutors and Roman captors. The same God, for all of these folk, proved himself to be a help, a fortress, a bulwark, never failing. And yes, it's also true of Jesus. During a false trial and a crucifixion, he had to know these things of his Father. But don't let the fame of these people suggest that God is any less a mighty fortress to you in the midst of your daily struggles or the trials that come your way, or just life in general. Psalm 46 is a powerful word of encouragement for all Christians. Maybe Christians that are troubled by memories of a moral struggle, or the parent perhaps in agony over the rebellion of a teenage son or daughter. This is a message of hope for the believer who's lost his job, as well as the woman who's lost her husband to cancer. Or right now, the person facing frontline issues in our care system, or someone stuck at home, homeschooling their children, or alone, self-isolating, or working so hard, trying to just do a normal job, but with longer hours than normal. Or maybe you are self-sufficient and you're just living a life with just the coping and getting through, then this psalm is a good reminder. This psalm is for you, and something that you can confidently declare. Verse 7, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. I'd prefer to rewrite that, because this is a personal psalm as well as a corporate psalm. The Lord of hosts is with me. The God of Jacob is my fortress. Do you know, you can confidently shout that from the top of the mountains, and I would suggest that sometimes we need to go and do that. To go and climb somewhere and shout it out, scream it out. The Lord of hosts is with me. The God of Jacob is my fortress. If you do that, will you please make sure that it's got an acceptable social distance and within your hour of daily exercise? But why don't you do it? Why don't you just go and do it? Why don't you declare this wonderful truth that applies to you? The structure of the psalm is relatively simple. It begins with declaration of God as our refuge and protection in the midst of natural upheaval. It's verses 1 to 3. And then it turns to God as our security in the midst of a national chaos in verses 4 to 7. And then the psalmist concludes appropriately with a call to worship. Verses 8 to 11. Is true. That in the end, we should always, whatever happens, be led to worship, be led to exalt the Lord our God. God is still God, you see, in times of upheaval and national chaos, and worthy of praise. So, if you look at the language of verse 2, where it says this, we will not fear though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea. There's little doubt that the psalmist is describing, as best as he can, something like an earthquake. Now, I've never been in one. Maybe some of you have been in one, but I've never been in one. I can remember once that the house shook a little bit when we were living in Rugeley, but that's about all. Sat up in bed and thought, what was that? But it was over in a few seconds. But I've watched the destruction of earthquakes on the news, which I guess you have too. And you look at the utter devastation and the way that that devastation creates widespread instability and uncertainty. I had a friend who went to pastor a church in America and would explain to me in great details the terrible effects of tornadoes, how they would wipe out communities in seconds. And the effect that that would cause on the community itself. People that would just come out of their underground bunkers and just stand and stare at the devastation. And how they didn't know what the next day would be like. We've watched only this year, haven't we? We've probably forgotten them now, that we had communities, some of them very close to us, that were ravaged by floods. Think of places like Ironbridge, so close to us. We're just wiped out, huge areas where the River Severn just rose to devastating heights. Those communities are still affected as we go through what we're going through as a nation. And yet it's another thing, isn't it, entirely, when the ground under your feet begins to shake uncontrollably. Suddenly all man-made things, all structures of support crumble and leave you feeling helpless. There's something psychologically unsettling about an earthquake that isn't necessarily the case with other natural phenomena. All one's foundations, one's sense of balance, one's physical and emotional stability are all swept away. There's nothing to grab hold of. Or is there? The psalmist, in the midst of the worst of scenarios and situation, can say this: God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Or he can say, God is my refuge and my strength and my very present help in trouble. How can he say that? Everything that he sees, everything that he's standing on, is shaking or a shook. Should the most solid and stable things created shake or fall headlong into the sea? The psalmist is able to say that God, for him, has remained steadfast, unwavering, and faithful. There is no earthquake of any sort, whether natural, moral, physical, financial, or spiritual, that can shake us out of his loving arms. I shall be safe, for Christ displays superior power and guardian grace, says Isaac Watts in his wonderful hymn, Join All the Glorious Names. It's hard to read this passage and not think back to another psalm, Psalm 18, where David describes God in similar language. He starts like this and he says, I love you, Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and he's my fortress and he's my deliverer. My God, my rock, in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. These were not just words. These were realities and experiences and truth. And from the upheavals of nature in verses 1 to 3 to the uproar of nations in verses 4 to 7, God is an ever-present help and a source of safety for his people. Whether it's the roar of waters in verse 3 or the roar of nations in verse 6, the psalmist has come to the conclusion that God is greater. Don't we sing that quite often? God is greater. So many times we sing songs, don't we? And we have to apply them. We have to not just sing them as if the tune's good, or we have to sing them as truth. Now, even though this is happening, I know this, that my God is greater. Whether the collapse of mountains in verse 3, or as the psalmist writes, the tottering of kingdoms in verse 6, my God is greater. In all cases and all scenarios, in all of time, everything goes back, does it not, to this one statement, and asks the question, is this true for you? The Lord of hosts is with me. The God of Jacob is my fortress. I guess if we were looking at this 6 months ago or a year ago, we might say that terror or international terrorism was the greatest threat to our nation, or some of the nations of the world, perhaps more than a natural disaster. We reported, didn't we? Or it was reported that we thought that terrorism was the most destabilizing thing to our nation. I don't know whether you can remember back when we saw those alarming pictures of terrorists at work in London. And to be honest, it was scary. Very scary, particularly if we were travelling into cities, or even the thought of, well, do I really know my neighbours? And in the days of the psalmist, it would have been the onslaught of Sennacherib or the attack of the Assyrians. Now, the Assyrians were awful warriors. It wasn't just that they were going to be taken into as slaves. It would have been the way that they would have been killed. And yet we'd have never have thought that in our day, the threat to our nation would have been a global virus. And yet it is. And we're in the midst of it. The psalmist says, though, this, whatever the circumstances, the city of God rests secure. She will not be moved, verse 5. No more than that. It's not just that she won't be moved. God doesn't just want you to survive. It's not about surviving this and getting through the other side. He wants you to know gladness. And this is referred when it says about the historic Jerusalem will be made glad by the streams. Those streams that brought refreshment and provision to that old historical city of Jerusalem. Now, it's those streams that come from the Holy Spirit that provides in the midst of challenge a sense of gladness and refreshing in the midst of all that is shaking. You can be glad because the Holy Spirit can make your heart glad. Whatever nature or nations may inflict on the people of God, our Father provides a gentle, refreshing stream for his people. And that's his promise. That's his promise to you. But how? Let's just go back to verse 1, where it says this: God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. God is my refuge. God is my strength. God is my very present help in trouble. Firstly, God is. It's not God might be or maybe these things. He's all of these things. They are a description of his nature, his consistency, his ability. He is all of these things all of the time and is never less than these things. God is. And there are three things that occur here in our time of trouble. God is a refuge and a strength and a help. It says God is my refuge. He's my shelter from the danger or the hardship. And the descriptions here can be, it can be from the storm. It can be like when you just move away and hide against that sort of wall, away from the way that the rain is driving. You think, just for a moment, I'm out of the wind. I'm out of the ferocity that comes with the rain. God says, no, I can do that for you. It's like he's like a rope that holds a tent down. He anchors it to the floor. Or he's like a high-walled fortress that you can go into to find where you can be looked after and cared for and blessed. You go in. It's a bit like the Good Samaritan story where you are taken and you think, I've been battered on this route, but he takes me into this inn and he feeds me and he gives me water to drink and something to eat and a soft bed to lie on. This is our God. Proverbs 18 verse 10 says this: the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous man runs into it and he is safe. Now, I can remember singing that, and I hope you can. The righteous run into it and they are safe. God is in his grace is available all the time to provide safety and protection. And the part we play is that we run to him. He's our shield and our protector. We can call out to him when we feel vulnerable, and he'll be there for us. Why don't you ask him? Now, why don't you run to him? The imagery here is of us running into this strong tower for safety. This is where I must get to as fast as I possibly can. Don't delay it. That's what the Proverbs say. Don't delay it. Don't live without him. Run to him. God is my strength. The word strength implies that God is the source of strength to those who are weak and defenseless, or that we may rely on his strength as if it were our own, or that we can feel safe in his strength, like we had a big brother that would protect us. It's a wonderful image, isn't it? This big brother that will come and fight with us. I remember when I was quite young, my brother used to come and watch me play football. He would shout from the side, and he would shout at me. And I don't know, but it just made me play that little bit better. Do you want to do life a bit better? Then know this, that you've got one like a big brother that will fight for you. Make it the basis of your confidence, not your strength, but his strength. Ask for it. Paul said this, did he not, to the church in Philippi, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. And how did he know that? Because he'd asked it many times before. When he said, I can't do this, or I'm unable to do this, or I struggle to do this, he called upon God and said, God, you're going to have to strengthen me to do this. And God had come and met with him and helped him. It's a foreign concept in our modern world, but strength out of weakness is an idea that you find scattered right throughout the Bible. It's how God works through his people. It's a gift to us. Do we think that we're strong enough to do this without him? I don't think we are. The writer of the Hebrews has a whole chapter, does he not, on the subject of faith? And yet he seems to want us to know how faith works. And how does faith work? What really is the essence of faith? And one of those ways, right at the very end of that passage in Hebrews, that for me stands out, describes these people of faith, and it says, who were made strong out of weakness. It's incredible, isn't it? Our faith is demonstrated as people who are made strong out of weakness. And God is happy to dish out in abundance his strength. And I'd rather have his than mine. I've been working at food bank twice a week, making parcels. I must admit that I don't mind doing the food parcel for one. That's okay. One tin of beans, one rice pudding. But there are occasions that Jenny, the warehouse manager, asks Callie and I to make the five or six. And you've got things like six tins of beans, six tins of tomatoes, six soups. I mean, you build up this crate that you have to shift at the end of it. And I realise that years and years ago that I could have picked that up and wanged it around. And now as a 63-year-old, I can't shift it very well. You know, there are things in our lives that we can't shift. And God is there to enable us, to strengthen us, to be able to fill us with supernatural strength for the things that we know are our area of weakness. We're made strong out of weakness. The last thing is that God is a very present help in trouble. And the word help just simply means aid or assistance. I will be your aid. I will be your assistance. But the emphasis isn't just on, I'll come and help you. I'll come and dig the garden with you. The emphasis is on, he is the best help. He is the perfect help. Do you know we have to get that? We have to really get that? That our best help for everything that we do is him? So many times I don't know about you, but I turn to myself first. I think, try and work things out for myself first. No, he's the best help. He's the perfect help. Lord, I need to get that in my head and heart. And he's the best help in our times of trouble. Now, all that means is that covers everything that would come under anxiety or sorrow or challenge or anything really. That whatever we face, whatever that looks like, whatever age we are, whatever our level is, whether that's a child doing learning or an older person, whatever, it doesn't make any difference. What the description is, that in our times of whatever that we're living through, he is our perfect and best help. More than that, he's a very present help. And very just means this is emphatically true. It's not that he just is our perfect help. He cannot. It's impossible for him to let you down. He cannot and will not let you down. It's impossible for him not to help you when you ask him. So he is a very present help, and present help means he is found or has been found. That is, he's proved himself to be help in trouble. But more than that, the word present is near to us or close by to us, and doesn't really accurately express the idea that when trouble is found, that he's ready to help because he's present and eager to help. The present help just means he's there and he's proven. Now, you know that, don't you? I know that. I know that in my life, God has proved himself to be my help. You know that. And we need to live reminding ourselves that he did it in the past and he will do it again and he will keep on doing it all the way through our lives because he is eager to help and he's proved that he will do that. Maybe the cry of help is both the simplest and most profound thing that we can do. I'm going to finish with a hymn. No, I'm not going to sing it. It's by Isaac Watts again. It was written in 1708 and it paraphrases Psalm 90. And maybe this week you could just take some time to read it. This is the hymn. Our God in help, our God, our help in ages past, our hope for years to come, our shelter from the stormy blast, and our eternal home. Under the shadow of your throne, your saints have dwelt secure. Sufficient is your arm alone, and our defence is sure. Before the hills in order stood, or earth received her frame, from everlasting you are God, to endless years the same. 1,000 ages in your sight are like an evening gone, short as the watch that ends the night before the rising sun. The busy tribes of flesh and blood, with all their lives and cares, are carried downward by your flood and lost in following years. Time, like an ever-rolling stream, bears all its sons away. They fly forgotten as a dream dies at the opening day. Our God, our help in ages past, our hope for years to come. O, be our guard while troubles last, and our eternal home. God bless you all. Take much care. Lots of love.